Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Dan Nathan, Karen Feinerman, David Seberg, and Guy Adami. We could be just days away from one of the biggest deals of the year, AT&T in talks to buy Time Warner. Let's go to the man who's been all over this developing story for the latest details, CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin. Andrew.
Hey there. We do have what looks like a deal that could be imminent, announced perhaps before the opening bell on Monday. The companies, both sides, are working feverishly to try to complete a deal so that they can announce something Monday over the weekend. They've been working with their advisors, and my understanding is the boards are expected to meet this weekend, assuming that they get to some final numbers. One of the big issues, by the way, that's been on the table, and I know a lot of investors are going to be looking at, is the breakup fee in a transaction like this, given the regulatory pressures that have been on so many of these mega mergers. Historically, there have been big breakup fees involved. The Time Warner Cable transaction, of course, fell apart with Comcast. There was no breakup fee in that transaction. So that this is going to be a big question, not necessarily a sticking point, but something that has been discussed at great length. The other thing that everybody's talking about as a result of this, if assuming it happens, is who else is in play and what happens next. I reported earlier today, but this puts enormous pressure, and you're already feeling it internally at CBS and Viacom to make that deal, though that is already obviously potentially on course. But you've watched the stocks of so many other media companies today really rocket on this news, on the idea that there could be just a bevy of transactions that come after this, all of which, of course, we will watch very, very closely.
Andrew, would the breakup fee include a scenario in which the FCC or the DOJ rejects the deal?
And that is the question, of course. And yes, that is what's on the table here, which is how much will AT&T ultimately have to pay? Remember, by the way, AT&T has done deals before that have been rejected. So AT&T went after T-Mobile, if you remember, and the government blocked that deal. And they paid a breakup fee for that. So there's going to be that's going to be the big question, where the regulators are on Monday on this deal, whether it's the DOJ or the FCC, whether companies like Netflix and others come out against a transaction like this or not, which is what happened in the case of when Comcast and Time Warner Cable came together. So there's going to be a lot of interesting bedfellows in this. And we will watch it, as you would imagine, very, very closely.
Andrew, it's Karen. Let me ask you something. There's talk about them wanting to push this deal through or sign up the deal very quickly. But it as a prevention from others jumping in. There is no hurdle to others jumping in, right?
Well, the other piece of it, and we don't know this, is whether there's going to ultimately be something called a go shop in this transaction, which would potentially allow other bidders to emerge afterwards. The folks that I talked to this afternoon, clearly AT&T does not want to go shop. I don't know the state of where that provision is or is not at this very moment. There have been some reports that Apple had raised this issue about potentially acquiring Time Warner in the past several months. Google apparently not interested in a deal. So unclear where the interest would necessarily come from right this moment. But yes, it is possible you could see a deal on a Monday morning and potentially others come in afterward. But we don't know that yet, so we should be very, very careful and cautious there.
And in terms of the price, Andrew, your reporting indicates somewhere north of 90. Do we have any
idea of how much more than 90? They're seeking more than 90, clearly more than 90. I don't have a final number. I've been trying. Let me tell you, I've been trying to no avail. Just to contextualize this, though, and I have heard this now from several sources, the previous deal, which they rejected from 21st Century Fox, which is important, was at $85 a share. And they wanted something north of $100 a share at that time. So just to give you a little bit of perspective of where the numbers could ultimately come and at least what they're asking for.
Sure. Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Ross Sorkin with the very latest on this. Now, we should note that earlier our own David Faber also reported that it could be somewhere up to $110 a share. Here we have the stock trading in the after-hour session north of 90, 90.25 to be exact. So, with this said, Guy, I didn't get your take yesterday night because
I wasn't here. You couldn't get my take because I wasn't here.
Well, I could have asked
you. It'd be very difficult for you.
What do you think?
Well, what do I think about this space now?
This deal and the implications for this space.
The implications for this deal means that Disney should have rallied more than it did, so it concerns me that Disney, on a day where the entire space is higher...
It shouldn't be a takeout target, should it?
No, it's not. But just with all, you know, rising tides lift all boats. I mean, look at the entire space, up over 2.5%. Disney's up 1%. So that concerns me going in earnings. What does that say? We're going to find out. But Netflix now, listen, Netflix is up 30%, give or take, this week. And we've been talking about this for a while. But does this now, the bullseye that was on Netflix prior to... Does this really hone in a bullseye on Netflix? A Netflix deal would be ridiculously expensive on any number of metrics, but I still say that Netflix is really hard. As many people want to say there's competition out there, it's really hard to replicate what they have built. So maybe somebody out there will take a flyer on Netflix, and the stock actions suggest that's the case.
Well, what was interesting is that we learned that Apple had been interested at one point in Time Warner, although it's been reported to the contrary at this point. But that indicates that perhaps Apple is in the market for
could
a potentially
Apple
large
buy...
content sort of deal.
No, they could, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. They have plenty of cash. It makes sense, logically. I just don't know that they take that stand yet. This telephone deal, though, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I look at it and say, it doesn't make sense from my perspective to pay a boatload of money for this company when you can license this content. So I think, in general, it really puts the shareholders that own AT&T in a very difficult position because the shareholders of AT&T look at this as AT&T going outside their comfort zone. So I think they could get a lot of pushback from the core holders, from the core shareholders of AT&T in this scenario.
Yeah, well, I would just say that the likelihood of this deal getting done is not particularly great. And so I think that some of the stuff I read today is about a 50-50. So the talk about a breakup fee is really interesting because back in 2011, they had to pay T-Mobile $6 billion. And that was considered a huge sum at the time. The DirecTV deal that they closed, I think, a little more than a year ago, it actually did not have a breakup fee if the regulators struck it down, which is pretty interesting when you think about it. So I assume that it's going to be something in between that. But the likelihood of this thing is happening is not great. And then you have to look at the other stuff. What are the other deals that happen? We know that, you know, AT&T already went after DirecTV. Now they want content. Is there any other play hookup in the space? Maybe Charter goes after a telco, that sort of thing. Maybe it's not. Maybe you just can't vertically integrate that way in this environment.
Yeah. How do you think about this deal, Karen?
Well, I think obviously for content, that makes content more valuable. And I wonder, though, is there somewhere else to go beside Netflix being, you know, up huge and still an expensive before this week started, expensive now? I wonder if, you know, a Lionsgate, your friend Michael Burns finds himself, you know, everyone wanting to talk to him. So content is king. That's an interesting little niche.
Yeah, and we saw the likes of a Lionsgate, a Discovery. They're all popping on today's news. For more on this potential mega merger, let's bring in top media analyst who's been struggling to see the logic behind the deal. Craig Moffett is the co-founder of Moffett Nathanson. Craig, why are you so skeptical?
Well, look, it's easy to imagine why there is logic in vertical integration in media. But the problem is the laws prohibit you doing anything interesting. So you have program access rules that say you can't keep any content proprietary. So you have to make your Time Warner content available to your competitors on an equal and non-discriminatory basis. That means you can't put it over DirecTV exclusively. You can't put it over AT&T Wireless exclusively. Same time, you have the net neutrality rules that say you can't zero rate and count it outside of your data caps for AT&T Wireless. So you end up with this kind of very flimsy logic of vertical integration. What you really end up with is I own some stuff over here and I own some stuff over there, and they run alongside each other.
Yeah, well, hence licensing.
Let me ask you this, though. In a world where all of these services, there's so much pricing pressure on all of them, right? And a lot of them have become utilities. Is it just the cross-selling opportunities? Is it just to take all of these massive different businesses, cable, telco, content, and just reduce the cost of providing it?
No, but look, you could go with... What you mean is reduce the price of selling it to the consumer.
Well, no, prices are going down no matter what. Right, but what I'm saying is reduce the cost of actually servicing.
But how does it reduce the cost? It reduces the price, right? But it doesn't reduce the cost. It reduces the price. And so you can get some churn benefit because you lowered the price, but you can get some churn benefit without buying the company. You can just lower the price. So a lot of the logic of this stuff doesn't hold up when you really poke at it, right?
Okay, so AT&T is a widely held stock. It's held now, probably a big reason is the dividend.
Sure.
Should we be concerned? I mean, it's got, $7 billion of cash on hand. It's a very levered company.
Yeah, so
it's going to pay for it in cash and stock, potentially,
it's
the debt
market. I would suspect it's not very much cash because AT&T looks like it's levered at about 2.3 times. It's got about $120 billion of debt on the balance sheet. But there's another $80 billion of debt that's not on the balance sheet. So count all of the operating leases for cellular towers, which under FASB rules have to be counted as debt now. So S&P and Moody's have already started doing that. Count the unfunded pension obligations. Count the unfunded OPEB or post-retirement health care benefits. And you're up to $200 billion, and you're levered at 3.5 times.
But is there any risk to the dividend?
No, I don't think so. And that's why, frankly, I don't think that investors, truth be told, are going to care that much one way or the other. They're going to look at the dividend, and they're going to go, dividend payout ratio is about the same as it was before. What do I care? Right. But the strategic logic of this is really tough to find, right?
Isn't
so it depends what you pay.
Isn't there a stock issuance more expensive for them potentially?
It is,
because
right?
That
because of the dividend.
Because they're not going to cut.
Our guess is you probably can't lever the acquired EBITDA at more than about the same 3.5 times where you're trading. Right. So you've maybe got $6 to $10 billion of additional borrowing capacity on the new on the new cash flows. You're talking about doing $70 billion of this or something in equity. And when you do that, you're issuing another $3.5 billion of dividend obligation. So, so your dividend payout ratio is probably not going to change one scintilla at the end of this transaction, right? It's going to be exactly where it was before, and you're just going to have more stuff. Now, if you want to diversify away from wireless because you don't like the wireless business, and let's be honest, the wireless business is shrinking at about 3-4% right now for AT&T and Verizon. So there's some logic for saying I want to go somewhere else. Right. But it's not industrial logic that says this, if I own this and I own this, that they're 1 + 1 = 3. It's 1 + 1 = 2, and it's either good or bad.
So in terms of the stock pops that we saw today across the media sector, do you buy the idea that maybe some of them are targets?
No, not really. You know, I think you have to think case by case. I understand the logic of the Viacom assets coming together with CBS, that's a sort of different case. But when you start saying there's going to be some setting off this chain of events in media acquisitions, I don't see it.
So this deal gets, if this deal got done, that could be it in the space. It's not a wave of consolidation.
That doesn't say there's no other media consolidation. It just says this deal isn't logically a catalyst for other media consolidation. There's lots of other follow-on things, though. You know, if AT&T buys this, they probably can't bid for spectrum from Dish. Mm. And then if Verizon ever does want Dish's spectrum, there's nobody to bid against. So that's bad news for Dish. It's probably if Comcast decides to counterbid to try to get Time Warner Cable assets, well, that means Comcast is never going to go for T-Mobile. So that's bad news for T-Mobile. So you're seeing all of those kinds of chess pieces moving around as people think about what happens here.
Craig, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it. Craig Moffitt-Nathanson. Okay, so ripple effect.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if it happens, I think a CN is a name you want to own. I mean, they're a distributor for a telephone. I just don't think, and I agree with you, I don't think it's going to happen. It doesn't make sense logically. License the content. Don't go out and buy that content. And think about bolting on growth somewhere else, because this is a no-growth company right now, AT&T is.
I mean, and as Dan said, the regulatory risk is
the regulatory
really
risks
really
are there,
high.
Right. But I look at it, I wouldn't step in here at all in AT&T.
If I were a shareholder of AT&T, should I be worried if this deal gets done?
I believe you should be a little bit worried because it's going to have to be done with stock, to your point. I think the stock has gotten ahead of itself in the first place because people were pouring into the high dividend paying out names, AT&T being one of them. I do think their business is probably in decline. So if the deal gets done, I think you could see a move, continued move lower in the shares.
Okay. Tonight on Fast, here's a Twitter suddenly spiking today. Is there a buyer out there who wants to take the risk? We've got those details. Plus, it's tech's moment of truth next week as names like Apple, Amazon, Alphabet all report earnings. Which names are the traders betting on ahead of the reports? We will reveal. And later, shares of Tesla just pennies away from doing something very scary. We'll tell you what it is and how you can profit. Much more Fast Money straight ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Twitter shares surging into the close today. The moves come as our own Julie Borsten sat down with Salesforce CEO Marc Benioff, who had some very interesting things to say about the company. Julia.
Well, Melissa, Twitter's wild ride. It took another turn today. The volatile stock climbing 7% near the close on some unsubstantiated M&A chatter. Now, last month, it was Benioff's Salesforce that was floated as a potential buyer. So I asked Salesforce CEO Marc Benioff about why he decided not to pursue a buyout of the struggling social media company.
Our stockholders heard that we were involved in a process, and they made it very clear that they did not want us to by that company. And so very specifically, we had to walk away. That's all. I love the CEO. I love the company. I love the brand. I love everything about Twitter, but our stockholders don't. And I listen to them. They're an important part of our family and how we do business at Salesforce.
Now, Benioff isn't the only billionaire who weighed in on Twitter takeover speculation today. Former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer has been floated in the past as a rumored buyer. Here's what he said earlier on Squawk Box when asked if he was ever interested in acquiring Twitter.
I have never, ever, ever wanted to buy Twitter myself. I mean, come on, I got a good life right now. I don't need to do that.
Even with today's jump into the close, Twitter stock is still down more than 20% so far this year. Twitter reports earnings next Thursday, and CEO Jack Dorsey will surely face questions from analysts about whether the company is for sale. You can find more from my interview with Mark Benioff on CNBC.com. Melissa?
All right. Thank you very much, Julia Boorstin. He's going to face questions from analysts. He's already facing ire from investors. What happened to this process?
Let me tell you something. That says more about Mark Benioff than it does about Twitter, and I'll tell you why. Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Page, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, they would have done what they think is best for their company in the long term, and they wouldn't have listed to a couple of top holders. I'm just saying that, and that, I'm telling you, it says a little bit more about
Benioff. Should have fine if he thought that was the best thing for the company.
Well, the guy's already bought $5 billion worth of overpriced assets this year. I'm sure he could afford another one. No. And don't forget that Microsoft bought LinkedIn, a money-losing company, for 7x sales, and everyone's talking about how expensive Twitter is that trades a little below 5x sales.
This would be the biggest acquisition it would do. I mean, isn't that a little bit different from buying all those other overpriced assets?
Why were they considering a higher bid, outbidding Microsoft for LinkedIn? Why were they considering this bid that nobody else wants? I'm just saying it says a little bit more about Benioff and maybe what's going on.
I totally disagree. I think you're dead wrong on that, Dan. I disagree with you, and I'll tell you why. That LinkedIn deal made absolute sense. But when they made that bid, what happened to the stock? The stock got smacked because every shareholder looks at that company and says, it's the purest SaaS play out there, and we like it for what they're doing. A mid-teens growth, we're very happy with that. What is that signaling about growth? That started the whole spur. Twitter? I mean, come on. If they want Twitter's data, they could buy it. Just like AT&T could buy Time Warner's.
I got to disagree with you totally. When you look at Zuckerberg, when you look at Page, they own huge chunks of stock. Huge. They're in a control position. They can do that. I think Benioff showed some good discipline. I think he should be applauded for that. You just are upset.
Guy, do you
Twitter
disagree also?
Yeah, you want to make a clean answer?
I mean, I'm just saying. No, I'm not in your grill.
Okay. You going to be
I
in
think
his
everybody
grill?
Makes an excellent point about the subject.
But whose point is the most excellent?
Well, I mean, they're all excellent points. There is no most.
Come on,
guy. I understand what Dan is saying. I think the fact that he took shareholder. I think he was more concerned. I think it was more an ego thing. You know, he saw his stock, which is, by the way, has had a pretty difficult year. I mean, you remember the move early in the year down to $60, subsequent rally, this move down to $68. And I think, yes, he heard shareholders' concerns, but just on an ego thing, this is the first time his stock has sort of wavered now since inception.
Guys, when Facebook had half the market cap it did right now, 2 years ago, they paid $22 billion for WhatsApp, a company with a couple dozen employees and no sales.
Without
okay, and never look back. I'm
with
just saying.
So this company's got no growth here. You have to cut costs and dump a boatload of money into Twitter to get this thing even moving.
Listen, I don't think Salesforce would have been the right buyer anyway.
I don't think so.
I'm just telling you that. But I'm just
saying he's a bad CEO because he listened to shareholders as opposed to did what he thought.
I'm telling you, and I've been saying this for a couple months. I've been saying this since that LinkedIn Microsoft deal. Something's going on at Salesforce. Why do they need to do that? Why do they need to outbid Microsoft? Why do they need to look at Twitter? Why does the stock keep going down? That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
Still ahead.
Giddy up.
Next week is the busiest week of the earnings season with the biggest names in tech from Alphabet to Apple reporting. We'll tell you which name traders see having the biggest move. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
If you thought this was bad for Tesla shares, wait till you see what some traders expect ahead of earnings next week. We'll explain. Plus, high-tech fashion. There's some very odd happenings in the world of fashion. And a handful of stocks are ready to cash in on the trend. The names when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Silicon Valley is getting a makeover. The area known for technology is looking to make its mark on fashion. Aditi Roy's got the details and joins us now from San Francisco. Aditi.
That's right, Melissa. Silicon Valley isn't exactly known for their setting style trends, but in keeping with its reputation for innovation, the Silicon Valley fashion show kicked off in cutting-edge style. Take a look. Yes, that was a drone coming down the catwalk last night. Tech and fashion converged at the second annual event. LED lights woven into clothes and headpieces and even purses also transformed ordinary T-shirts into electrifying art pieces. At times, the show resembled a Cirque du Soleil show with performance artists staging acrobatics. One of the presentations was a man dressed as a human claw. And human unicorns paid homage to their billion-dollar counterparts as 500 onlookers gawked and snapped with their smartphones, no doubt tweeting, posting, and Instagramming. San Francisco-based designer Beta Brand relies on crowdfunding to decide whether their clothing will make its way into production. Each item must reach a financing goal before the designers roll it out. The majority of the pieces were just for show, but Silicon Valley designers have actually sold their pieces to celebrities like Lady Gaga, Missy Elliott, and Madonna, all fashion-forward ladies. Back to you, Melissa.
Certainly are. Too fashion-forward for me, at least. Aditi, thank you. Aditi Roy in San Francisco. All right, in lieu of the final trades, we want to stay on this fashion runway theme here. Just some Trey Chic stock picks. These are names ahead of the trends and worth a buy right now. So we're going to go to the chicest of them all, Dan Nathan.
Yeah, right. You know who they say out in the valley who's really chic is Jack Dorsey. They do say that about how he dresses. And he's also the CEO of Square, you know, the mobile payments company. And I think this could be a long runway for hardware within this secular trend, so Square.
Karen.
I'm going to go with chic for kids, but well-priced. Well-priced for the kids, parents, and the stock, children's place.
All right. Oh, look at you on Vogue. You look good on the cover of Vogue. Steve.
I like the Adidas trend. I think Adidas is an excellent company, taking North American share. They're going to get into this space. I'd be ahead of that. Adidas is a buy.
That's really unbelievable, you on the cover of Vogue. Guy.
See, I went where Fitterman went. So you can't spell chic without children's place somewhere, right?
Interesting.
And you can't spell Chico's. Without, right?
Chico.
See what I did there? Yeah. CHS. See my cover on Vogue?
All right. By the way, Time Warner in the after-hour session up 5%. Stay tuned. Options Action starts right after this break.